Good evening, everyone. It's Wednesday night. It's 7 o'clock on the West Coast. And we're beginning again. We're beginning this class, which is this segment of our study of the American Book of the Dead by E.J. Gold. This is our 35th week. We're slow readers here. And there's a reason why we're slow readers, because we're forging something different in an ordinary life. Okay? How do you like that line, Ivan? We're forging something new and different. And in order to do that, it takes persistence, attention, and a willingness to do it. The prize of, you know, the great prize comes at a great price. It's like that in life everywhere, isn't it? Things of high quality require a bit more. Look at these guys in, let's just say somebody like, Yuja Wang, who's a Chinese piano player. So I think she's 30 or something like that. And has played with all of the great orchestras by this time. Mm-hmm. Spectacular performance on Rachmaninoff Concerto No. 3. But because she works at it. Do you know the name? Of course you do. Pablo Casals?
Yeah, I know Casals, yeah. Cellist.
He's a cellist of the first order, right? Of the history of all of cellists that ever were. His name is often always mentioned. When he was in his 90s, he was giving an interview with somebody, and the interviewer, you know, I guess didn't understand something, and he looks at Casals and he says, "I hear that you practice like 4 or 5 hours a day. Is that correct?" He goes, "Yes." And then, "Well, why do you practice so much? I mean, you're the best, you know, gosh, you're so good. You've done everything." He goes, Casals look at the guy and he says, "I think I'm making progress." That's the truth. That's the truth of it. And you begin to penetrate something. And what we're talking about is penetrating yourself at this point. That's got a big S on it, okay? It's got a big S. Because we've been given the blessing of this lifetime. We've been given that on this rocky planet that, gosh, who knows what's going on here, but that's the deck of cards that has been dealt to us. So now, what do you do with it? And when I say you begin to, we have to forge, we're forging pathways to the higher. And the only way to do that is to work in a certain manner. And right now, you'll let us know if we have a question, and you have the phone right there. And right now, everything's lining up in a certain way. Several people have indicated that these particular two chambers that we're going to look at tonight are just bang on for them right now. Okay? They can't hear? Oh, in terms of excellence.
Yeah.
This is a, if I remember correctly, this is a father who works at this small sushi stand, really, in the Japanese underground in the subway area. And he did it for all his life. But he's penetrating every element of that process. What knife does he use? Upon what does he cut it? What is the material upon what is? How do you find, what does the exact, proper, perfect fish look like? And he just persists. It's so for this individual, which is a great suggestion that Grant said. I'm sorry, I should say the name of it again. Tell me the name.
Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
And he's penetrated it. So the actions that this man takes when he's preparing Shushti, this is like the ultimate act of hospitality. Someone comes to his restaurant, sits down. If I remember the movie correctly, there's like 10 seats or something total, and it's always full. But think of the act. So he does this, and then suddenly he does it, and goes, oh, yeah, this is really good. And then he suddenly starts to understand he's doing it for another. And the world just expands. And it's like Bill DeGroot making the perfect truffle. It's like creating something that you know is going to be something for someone else to take in. We are at the beginnings in our work of emanation of a certain part. We are emanating a particular vibratory force. So when you go forth, whatever you're doing, that is something that is occurring when you go forth. Okay? So, in that regard, I want to look at these two chambers together, and they're just startling. They're really quite startling if you look at them. So let's open up to chamber 30. 23. How about 23? Okay. And it's an interesting chamber in itself. And then when we move to 24, you'll see the compare and contrast that was so, it just blew me away. And I'm going to, and Harry, I might need to draw on you a little bit because I'm going to speak about grace for just a moment, okay? And
sure.
You have a bit of a background in that. And of course, Silverdale as well. So the 23rd chamber. Why don't I read, we're just going to read the first paragraph, talk about it for a moment, then you can continue on. 23rd chamber. If I have been practicing the teaching during my life in human dimension, I'll give that again. If I have been practicing the teaching during my life in the human dimension and have accumulated baraka or grace, I won't have such a bad time of it here, and the Voyager's talking about here, I'll be feeling blissful and pleasant about right now. So the Voyager right now is in the place called, it's in the choosing rebirth phase, the third stage of the Voyager, and the Tibetans call this the bardo of existence. It's actually the traditional way that I think people think of the afterlife right now. But right now, the Voyager's sitting there and this bliss is coming about, right? It's like a blissful feeling of you're ebullient. There's a sense of bliss. Now, and I wondered a lot, well, what do they mean by grace? There's a formula here, right, in that first sentence? If, then. And for all you logicians out there, that's a traditional form of a argument, an if-then statement. If I've been practicing the teaching, then I would have accumulated grace. And in some of the traditional teachings about what grace is, there's the grace, the actual grace, the grace that you get during moments of existence, and sometimes that grace, you feel it, you can feel this sense of you're, like I call it like a mini enlightenment. There's like this, you're lifted up, right? You're lifted up and you go, oh my, this is fantastic. Spinoza calls that, you know, moments of eternality, moments of eternality. And in further teachings, they talk about sanctifying grace.
Okay.
And then the distinction in sanctifying grace, is that a term that you've heard before, Harry?
Yes.
And the way I understand it is that the sanctifying grace is that then the person is thus sanctified. There's a permanence to it.
Yes.
There's a beginning of a permanence, like a foothold that you stand upon, and that you this comes from your inner works. The thing that we must be very careful of is, what does it mean to follow the teaching? If I follow the teachings in this life, does anybody want to talk about that?
Well, David, doesn't it mean we just simply keep coming back to the water? That we keep coming back to the watering hole, despite our inability to do it cleanly at any given time? We keep coming back. There's a tenacity that has a reward. And I think that's what this is referring to. There's a center of gravity of the essential self that begins to take precedence over the whims of the machine.
So there's a interplay. Does this make sense to you, Silverdale?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I like the way Harry said it. I guess I'm thinking also in terms of the teaching is related to self-perfecting, in which we attempt to awaken our essential self and develop our essential self so that it becomes a contributing part of our own personal trinity. So anyway, that's the way I understand this.
So when I talk about that, like forging a new life, right?
Mm-hmm.
We forge this new life by our practices. Now, the practices are, and I want to distinguish here, because there's a great deal of discussion about this in particularly in the Christian traditions. I don't know if there is in the Eastern traditions as much, but in the Christian traditions, the quality of your prayer. The lowest form of prayer is, I pray to God so that I get this job, and that I do get this job because then I'll really be able to have a good life. So you're actually praying to the divine for material existence, which seems strange, but of course we don't think about things too much, do we? And then the next phase, some of the next phase is you pray for like spiritual gifts. Oh, pray that these sins are taken from me. Pray that this and that, so on and so forth. That, you know, please, Lord, save me. I'm a miserable sinner. And then another phase is that you're praying. And if and you're saying, oh, I'm going to pray so well that God will give me grace. And for me, all of those really are very much in the same thing. It's only finally when we give up the pursuit of that end game for me that your teaching becomes an inner living modality. And when it's a living inner most modality, when the model is inner, then you're doing real work. If you're doing it for any of those other reasons, it's always tainted. Doesn't mean it's not worthy to do. Now is the time when you listen to your teacher. Now is the time. This is what this is telling us in 23. Listen to
What about praying for others?
Hi, Susan.
Hello.
That's a good question.
I think it's the exact same thing. It depends on how clean you can do it. Can you get yourself where your heart is empty and you're making the effort and you're directing the effort toward another? Because, and it's through the purity of that you do it. That's when, for me anyway, it's the most effective.
Doesn't this also sound like a practice, Susan? That's a practice, praying for others. I mean, we say, we have our saying, in other words, I wish for the results of these small efforts to be for the benefit of all sentient beings.
But that's already, that's at a higher level. What about the, you know, God bless mommy and daddy and my pets?
That's better than
God bless me and giving my car. Mike's Mercedes.
Where's
Benz.
My, yeah.
And a color TV and a Mercedes Benz.
Oh, Lord, won't you
give
find
me
a
Mercedes Benz?
Well,
Okay,
I got it started. David, I was thinking there's an element. There's a difference there. I mean, I'm not sure if it's, you could say that it's coming from a Buddhist tradition, somewhat, you know, like a Tibetan Buddhist tradition, or, but it's, we're not talking about where you're acknowledging that you're a sinner, or that you're incomplete, or you behave badly, and you're going to be saved. You know, you know, find the external source that's going to save you, because I don't think that
right.
That's practices. It's like grace. I mean, you know, there are religious beliefs that go along the lines that, you know, it doesn't matter what you do, what your practices are, what your daily life is like, and so on. You know, no matter how big a sinner you are, you can be saved.
That's
and
right.
When you go down to the river, you're going to get into this state of mind where from outside you're going to be saved. And I just think that this is talking about accumulated baraka, you know, accumulating the baraka or the grace is a completely different formula. Saying that this is something that you're going to do incrementally, and that it has to do with your own path and your own work that you're pursuing.
So, and it happens a little teeny bit at a time.
And I have something to add.
Go for it.
I know that the two times that I came close to death, I had the panic and I was scared and all that, but then there came a moment of total calmness, and it was just somehow everything was okay, whether I stayed or went. Is that calmness the same thing?
I think that what happened is that you flipped into your essential self at that time, that there was enough accumulated work, whether this lifetime or other lifetimes, Susan. I think that it's accumulated from a lot of work, from a lot of time, and that was potentially available to you, and it became actually available at that time. The machine, interestingly enough, in those situations with you, the machine was overpowered. It could no longer operate. The machine basically
right.
shut down, and you had something. You had place to go. Very important point for the rest of what we're going to be talking about here. Very important. Okay? So, how do we work? How do we practice the teaching? Has got to be like tattooed on our forehead. You look in the mirror and you go, oh, right, there's that. It should have a blue neon sign embedded into your left hand. Every time you lift your left hand up, oh, yeah, then there's that. you go to put your shoe on, and inside your shoe is the sign that says, how are you practicing the teaching?
Mm-hmm.
So what is your strategy right now? Because we're given a great hint here in this chamber, aren't we? If we practice the teaching, we'll accumulate grace, and if we accumulate grace, we have a little bit of handhold at this point. Kind of cool. but.
Oh, you want to do the but paragraph?
Then there's another, the next paragraph. Go ahead.
Let's read it. Got a comment? But if I have been indifferent toward the teaching during life, I will now see indifference and ignorance all around me. If I see objects of pleasure and desire, I won't try to go after them or bring them in to me. I'll offer them to the beloved instead. I'll give it all away to the Office of Coincidence Control. I will let them have it all. I realize that none of this is real enough for me to actually possess anyway.
When I read this paragraph, I kind of pulled it apart a bit. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a distinct concept of the first line that if I haven't practiced it, basically there's a dullness. You're not involved. You're not engaged in a certain way. There's not enough oomph for you as you go forward. The second part actually talks about holding a certain form of objectivity as you're going through this particular section now where on the road to rebirth, in some of the commentary they say that you start to suddenly, you know, you wake up and you realize that you're on the road to rebirth and you're trying to find the rebirth now. Oh, I'm going to go to rebirth. Okay. And that's why in the last one there's family and friends and things like that. Mm-hmm. Now this other thing, we're going to see something in the next chamber real quick. So there's a form of objectivity that will take you through the onslaught. Okay? Now, there's going to be a very important point coming up. So we're indifferent. We have a way to remain indifferent to those, to the pleasures and, what does it say, pleasure and?
Desire. Pleasure Objects of pleasure and desire.
Pleasure and desire are you give them to the beloved. You say, oh, this is not me. This is just my chatter of karma. Here, I'll give it up to you. Take it.
We also have a comment.
That takes a form of objectivity that is very important to stand on, and we can practice it. Okay? So this comes with you to you during the day. Can you give it up to the beloved at that moment? Yes, Susan, thank you for that. Go ahead.
The comment is from Antimatter. For me, there is also the element of observation. Observe comes from the Latin root word observare, watch over, note, heed, to attend to in practice, to keep, to follow.
That's fundamental to what we're talking about now. I was going to wait a couple of minutes, but I think I'll bring the point in now. As you all know that on Wednesdays in the early afternoon, Marvette holds a class. That I think, Dan, are you in that? The science fiction readers class?
Antimatter's
in it, others. I think Gnostic Man, me.
Laura
Lila. Laura Lila's in it. And for some reason, she always posts this big, long thing in Prosperity Path forum on the Facebook. And so here we are starting the 23rd chamber, and she selected one of the talk of the month. It happens to be the 23rd talk of the month. And I was wondering if you could tell us what the topics were in that particular. Can you hand her the phone, please? She could turn it on for us so she doesn't have to. Do that dance. Just speak into it.
Okay.
A little closer.
The 23rd talk of the month is called The Way of the Shaman. And it begins with elucidating the hobo, the holy hobo prayer, because it talks about the hobo and that tradition of not, it's not about learning to wake up, but it's about learning to see what really exists right in front of your eyes. And the holy hobo, the hobo is different because most people may be looking for something and the hobo is looking for something, but his prayer is that he only hopes that he can find it when he sees it.
But the hobo is in the mode of knowing he wants something, he's seeking something.
Yeah.
He doesn't necessarily know what it is. And he hopes
that he'll recognize it.
So what a moment of vigilance that is. When I read this, I was just saying, boy, is this so bang on to these two chambers right now, where the voyager is sitting there, and his pleasures and desires and stuff are coming through. How do I recognize? I pay attention. I develop my sensing in such a way that I can know this is better than that. For instance, Susan said, what about praying for your parents? Or,
mm-hmm.
That's on the right track, isn't it? That's good. That's a good thing. So the hobo, I am going to use the word holy hobo. The holy hobo is now introduced into this. It is the voyager on the planet that is the holy hobo. The hobo, where does the hobo live? Where's the hobo?
Journey.
They don't have a house to go to at night, do they?
No.
It's the journey itself that is the home for the hobo. We are voyagers.
The birds have nests and the foxes have holes, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head.
So that's... So... What is it called? Practice the teaching. And it's to be cycling through this information all the time. So it's always fresh in your mind. You're always worried, am I on the path right now? Am I on the path? I don't know if I'm on the path. That's healthy. If you're working to discern all the time, it helps strengthen something. So here's the poor voyager then. You know, he was doing the teaching and he's not doing the teaching. All this stuff is going on. And then this, I am in a state of indifference to it all. I won't meditate on forms or try to visualize. That's that form of high indifference of true objectivity. You just noting that it's unfolding in front of you. I'm about to take the grand tour of safe spaces, shelters of refuge. I'll see all sorts of nice, safe buildings, tunnels, caves, shrines, temples, monasteries, places, rocks, trees, anything solid, safe looking is attracting. These wounds are all traps. Why does it say that? Why is that true? Anybody? Why are those wombs all traps? Dan?
They offer a promise of safety. So they have an attraction, a place to hide.
The traps because we're seeking refuge. It's not our strategy. It's not, we're not, heaven said, here's my strategy. We're just going, oh gosh, I feel uncomfortable now. I'm buffeted around. Here's a good place.
It's more of that anywhere but here.
Anywhere but here? No. Our author lists many different forms that refuge will take, right? So here we are standing in 23, and there's a form of like objectivity that we have, right? We have this grace. We're imbued with this particular grace, and then we notice that we're not subject. We're looking for the objectivity of standing in the pure objectivity, right? Mm-hmm. And notice these forms are approaching us. And then look at chamber 24 then. So we kind of like, maybe we have a little bit of a leg up right now. Then says, I don't seem to be able to hold on or stabilize my fast and fleeting consciousness at this point. Suddenly you've lost it, right? In a certain way you were kind of like had a leg up. But haven't we all had that experience where suddenly the world's, you know, think the world's going okay, and then suddenly everything's changed. Everything's turned dark. Everything's become difficult. And you're never going to see your way around it. And my thoughts are coming more rapidly. I seem to have lost the ability to make any sense how they string together, what the sequence. Everything seems isolated, disconnected. Look at the nature of the mood now. Hasn't it just fundamentally changed? All out of, I feel hungry, tired. I don't want to run or wander, feeling as though I'm about to be caught or captured. All I want to do is hide inside something. Whoops. So is that filling your strategy?
Well, it sounds more like a state of panic.
Mood is descended and you fall into panic and you fall into the trap of things like, oh, I'm going to seek refuge now.
Well, one thing that I just noticed at the 23rd chamber, and it happened a while back, is that the lights are gone, the sharp, clear, burning lights and the soft, fuzzy, comforting lights are all
absolutely
gone, but not really.
Correct.
And the soft, fuzzy lights have now turned into tunnels, caves, shrines, rocks, things to hide in.
Places of refuge.
The easy way out here. So what it's saying here is that now I've transitioned from this like state of grace in a certain way into this, I'm just disoriented. It's painful. I'm hungry. I'm tired. I don't know what to do. I think I'll just seek refuge right now. I'll just seek a safe refuge, right? Look how tough it is. Of course I deserve that. So if that's your strategy, you'll get sucked into probably the lower six dimensions of some sort. And then this is where the hungry ghosts are even now. And you start, that's where you go. That's what winds up happening if your strategy isn't in place. And your strategy can only be in place if you have enough wherewithal to withstand even these fundamental mood shifts. You, it's not a mood, it's real, isn't it? It's totally real. It's like, oh my God, nothing makes sense. And at that point, there's not anybody to ask, is there? Can't pick up the phone and call your buddy. So what form, when you go through your day and you see what form of refuge works for you, how does it operate? Do you notice it? Do you notice it during the day that suddenly there's like this little space and you want to be in it? I was in this group down in L.A. many, many years ago called the Spinoza Virginia Group, and there was a guy in it named Henry Wallace, very staid, serious student, read a lot. And he said that he'd get home at night, walk into his apartment, close the door, lock the door, turn around, lean his back against the door and go, ah.
He's relieved.
That was refuge for him. He got away from the difficulties of life rather than learning to be the voyager. I'm not saying that it's appropriate to have a clean space and a meditative space and not to want that disrupted. This is the teaching, how does this work in you? This is an objective statement of how things do work. So my question is, how does it work in you? My father died a few years ago, and he was in a rehab center, and they wouldn't let him home. They wouldn't let him go home, and so I had to fly down to L.A. area, and I went to this rehab center, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was this administrator there, she reminded me of Lisa. She was going to tell you what the rules were. She was an administrator. She says, oh, he can't go home. It's not safe for him to go home yet. He's not going to be able to go home. Here are the rules. Da-da-da-da-da-da. I just looked at her and I says, great. Let me talk to your boss. And no one ever talk back to her.
Sure.
So I talked to in an hour. She says, I'll be back in an hour. And I'd like to speak to the doctor, either the administrator of this place or the doctor. I spoke with the doctor an hour later. And he said, well, you know what? I haven't ever reviewed this case.
Mm-hmm.
Who made the decision then? Right?
Mm-hmm.
This administrator was controlling this situation. We had a long talk with the doctor, and the doctor says, I see no reason why Mr. Franco can't go home at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Hour later, he was on his way home. And what did he want to do when he got home? One thing, he wanted to sit in his chair in front of the TV. I noticed this, and I thought to myself, seeking refuge.
Yeah, that's safety.
For him,
security.
That was a security. That's why he wanted to leave the place. It had nothing to do with his body or ill health. He needed to sit in the place of refuge for him. That's the form it took for him. So what do you think? Additions, subtractions, thoughts, Ivan, Susan, we missed each other two or three times this week, haven't we?
We have. There's a couple of comments.
Please, would you help us out here then?
Yes. Harry says some very interesting comments from Lost. From soft lights to places of refuge, both are escapes.
Right.
And then another question. Simon wasn't sure if he understood the context, but he said, my refuge is a cigarette at some point, sometime during the day.
Yeah. That's just how it works. It works that way. And if you, it's an interesting point of observation for all of us who've smoked in the past, is that you notice it's there's a physical element to it, but more than that, it's the tension of life, in a sense, and how do I get out of it? Oh, real simple. I'll go over here and have a smoke.
David, I've always viewed smoking, which I used to do also, as a state change anchor, guaranteed to change your internal state and get you away from feelings you don't like.
Yes.
I've mentioned a few times about this bar that is down the road from us in the middle of Grass Valley. It was the only thing open at 7 a.m. in the morning on Christmas Day. And, you know, and there were five or six people in there having a drink. For those individuals, that was a place of refuge.
Well, it's also a case of habits. You know, the habits will carry on through weekends and holidays.
Whatever the habits are, so which habits do we want to imbue this gift of being that we have now? We've been imbued with a gift. Let us take that gift and treat it with the excellent that it is. It's a prize that has been given to us. And we want to care for it. It's as if we've been given a Fabergé egg, let's say. And it's an actual real one. They're worth millions, right? Or an antique of great value. But it's so delicate. And your job is to caretake it for future generations. So you must handle it carefully, right? But you must handle it.
Mm-hmm.
You must show it. You know, you get an original Rembrandt painting, the first thing you do is just accidentally put your fist through it. What else you got there, Susan?
I have a comment from Druhin.
Yes.
Being a voyager is tough. I'm a newbie to this realm. Love the hobo prayer and the journey. Watching the journey in various refuges. The book is Sufi at heart and beloved it many times. If I may say, Judeo-Christian conditioning is used to explain, maybe it's the voyagers who worked for a long time. I'm just saying, grateful for this 23rd chamber and the science fiction write-up about Tom's journey, this journey. I'm so, so green. Familiar pains and situations pull me, and as it was said, comfort zone. LOL.
Druhin, we are all newbies in this. But it is possible to develop strategies. That's the thing that's so exciting to me when I read the first sentence of chapter of Chamber 23. If I've been practicing the teaching, then there will be establishment of a ground within the being, which I'm going to call grace, which the author is saying that is grace. So if that's there, then that means it's possible to develop adequate and effective strategy through these periods of being buffeted. And sometimes we're buffeted by powerful forces that appear to be coming from outside, and other times from these desperate moods that that flow through us. Great comments. And yes, it is. There's a lot of Judeo-Christian terminology being used here.
just to clarify, he was talking about the Talk of the Month Club.
Oh, I see. Okay, thank you. So then, 24 continues, the idea of getting into rebirth in an undesirable, miserable, how do you like that? Undesirable or miserable lower dimension is the cause of this desperation to find a safe place in which to hide. If I don't panic, I won't get rebirth in the lower dimension. So a lot of this has to do with finding out strategies on not panicking. But, and we think about not panicking means the giant tiger is coming to attack us. How do I stop panicking? How about the thing that might be attacking you is a mood of depression?
That could be a difficult one to overcome also.
But it requires just as much strategy, doesn't it?
Well, that's sort of sidestep it somehow.
And if we look at practical work on self and we look at HDM, we can say, I am not that. Mm-hmm. But my gosh, it's a good theory, but until you drive it into day-to-day life and you see how your anger works or your...
Simon says, I have so many refuges that I started to rent them out.
Rip them out.
Well?
Well, it strikes me, David, that those refuges, you know, the drive towards security or towards protection and safety and so on is going away from the voyager. It's like saying that it's too painful to be the voyager. I'm too scared to be the voyager. It's too boring. I'm too bored to stay on here and be the voyager. So you go towards distraction or activity or security or whatever your habits are, whatever the machine habits are. You know, but as Silverdale is always saying, with the essential self, to forge this path, you know, to forge this new structure or new process that David's been talking about, it's necessary to go with the voyager. Go with the voyager awareness and the voyager atmosphere, and it may include tolerating pain. stuff that's frightening.
And tolerating stuff that's highly pleasurable, too.
Desire, yeah. Pleasure.
Desire.
Objects of pleasure and desire.
All of them are the same thing.
And monsters.
It's expanding.
And zombies.
Broad
perception.
Yeah. David, could part of our strategy be to yield to the beloved, give this up, not only our desires and temptations, but even our panic?
If we can stand in the moment, if that becomes we can create a habit pattern, Harry, where when that occurs, the habit says, I offer this up to you, the beloved. I offer this up to you.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that this is just a karmic impression that is unfolding itself. This is my karma unfolding itself as it is, right now, and tomorrow morning, when whatever happens, that's my karma coming along. Okay? That's the vista upon which I look. And if we can stand in the world of the Voyager, we're living in a new world. It's literally a new world. It's brand new every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's thoroughly, for me, it's just thoroughly exciting.
When there's something about being able to withstand the panic to get to the next place.
That's correct. You know, if you look at I had this client of mine, and we had been on the phone with somebody, and the person got angry. There was a lot of anger, you know, this stuff happening. Then that person dropped off the phone, and the person, my client said, Well, that person had a lot of energy around that. Didn't even call it anger, just said there's a lot of energy there. Mm-hmm. Well, that energy of panic has nothing, one of the elements that has is a lot of energy. Can there be a new habit when the panic hits? That's the freedom. That's the moment of freedom that begins to unfold itself. Excellent, Susan.
Well, Simon wanted to remind you of the joy of sacrifice, redemption.
Okay.
Well, I'm looking at the rest of that chamber, and is that all right if I
yeah, go ahead.
Talk about it? Well, it talks about how all the rocks and safe spaces are wombs in various dimensions, and then it says they're color-coded. I can look carefully at their color, and I'll be able to tell which dimension I'm being attracted to. So for a Voyager who's not panicking, there's actually information there that they can use.
Discernment. There's discernment.
If the Voyager can then stand in the moment of discernment about all of the areas, either whether it's the God realm or the hungry ghost realm, if the Voyager can stand there and they just says, oh, that's what's coming out of me now. That's the karma that's unfolding. As Harry says, and I give that to the beloved. I therefore give that up as well.
What struck me about what Harry is saying there, there's a crossover, speaking of practices, with the chronic defense mechanism in the human biological machine, among those practices. In other words, this could also be a moment of in ordinary life, let's say in human life, a moment of recognition. And to say that I recognize that panic is that last barrier, the last grip of the
at that
self.
Moment, that is, that's
it. Yeah, and that so that if I can then be detached, it's another way of saying, give it up to the beloved or the Office of Coincidence Control, but if I can have that moment of recognition and be detached from that panic, then I may go into a Voyager state.
Something else
just to say
might,
the waking state
might be possible.
Of the machine.
Correct.
Actually, in that formulation.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, it's beginning to look like this is where the primate programming is coming from, and that the primate is formed around the all of the third stage events. At least that's what it seems to me right now.
The reformation of consciousness.
This is the primate existence. Is out at this point. This is that bardo of existence, they call it. It's primate is that we will start visualizing the womb in which we want to be. We'll look at it. We'll say, oh, I want to be born exactly like I was before. That
mm-hmm.
shadow will be there.
Mm-hmm.
These things will start coming up now. It's we're walking toward rebirth at this point. But the Voyager has tools. The Voyager has many tools with which they can call upon to develop strategies to let us do that. Let us find those strategies, but they have to be pragmatic for each person. This is why there's the beautiful offering of this teaching. And then there's the genius of implementing it. Each individual. Each individual will create a genius of implementation here. Okay?
So Simon said that this meeting has brought to me an unusual charge, positively.
Wow.
And thanks to all you for this.
Excellent.
Melissa Lorca says to me as well, Simon, and thanks to you all. Harry said, have really enjoyed your comments tonight, Simon. There's a whole lot of gratitude going on.
And it's gratitude. We are the Voyagers come together. You know, this is like the hobo camp.
This is the hobo camp. Yeah, this is the whistle stop here.
The whistle stop. The rest of the town has gone off and done what they've done. And the hobo camp forms, and song and dance and sharing comes on. And we have a lot to share to each other. Somebody has an extra can of peas and they share it with a friend. That's what we do tonight. That's what we're able to do all the time together. Thank you, Susan.
Of course.
Okay. How are we doing?
Perfect timing.
Perfect timing. That's what I like to hear, Harry. Perfect timing. So that's, I think, all we have tonight for this. We'll move on slowly toward rebirth as we start in on Chamber 25 next week. We'll see you at the same time next week. Thank you for coming. Take care.
Good night.
Thanks, David.
Good night, everyone. Thanks.
Thank you, Harry. Susan, can you stay on a minute?
Yes.
Okay. Just wait a moment, okay?
Good night.
Earth? Is that Shikova there? Good night, Shikova. What a nice voice to hear. What did you get? Are the mics off?